show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on Tuesday, the 19th of January, 2016, with me, Paul Andrews, and Martin White. And we heard from our two guests earlier in the show, and we've got another guest coming up shortly in the show. I'm gonna try and catch up with some of the tweets, because Twitter is still messing about out there. Natalie Benet has sent me a message on Facebook to say that she can't tweet because Twitter's messing about, to thank us for the shout-out that we gave earlier. And it's an absolute pleasure, Natalie, as always, to give you a shout-out, and thank you for contacting us on Facebook. But I have got some tweets still hanging around on the screen. I've got East Kent College. And they say, VanillaWeb, could you give us a shout-out, please, to thank all the excellent businesses we work with to provide some great apprenticeship opportunities? Absolutely, I will. So that's East Kent College, based over there in Ramsgate in Thanet. Mm-hmm. And they would like to say thank you to all the businesses that work with them on their apprenticeship schemes. So a big thank you to them.
Can I give a sneak preview of an event that's going to be happening at East Kent College?
Oh, go on, then.
On the 14th of March, to celebrate the start of National Apprenticeship Week, East Kent College and Supply My Business are going to be hosting a networking event for Supply My Business members. So we're hoping to have in excess of 90 businesses attending on the day. Paul, you yourself have agreed to come along and
give a
keynote, and East Kent College will be talking about apprenticeships and their relevance for small businesses.
Cool. Good stuff. Now, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be fun. Yeah, absolutely. Rob Parker from GoFacinity has been in touch again. He's giving us a bit of jip here. He said, "I like Windows 10. He didn't say it in that voice. That was my voice. "I like Windows 10. He says, "I've got a Windows 10 tablet and a Windows 10 laptop, and I'm a Mac-based man. Very nice user interface for Windows 10, he says.
He's a geek.
He is a geek, though, isn't he? Yeah, he is a geek. We've had a tweet from Jill Serkin. Just says break a leg. I think that's I'm going to break your neck is really what she's saying there. is really where that's going. And we've also had a tweet from the lovely folks at New Appointments Group, who say, "Hi, this is Andrew at New Appointments Group. We're tuned in and enjoying the Business Bunker show. Best wishes to Paul and the team." Thank you very much indeed, Andrew and the team at New Appointments Group.
Andrew is such a nice guy.
He's a lovely, lovely man, yeah.
Very similar to Jackie, you know, started that business 18 years ago, or probably
longer than that,
yes.
New Appointments Group,
been
yeah.
there from the beginning, and it really shows when you go and talk to Andrew about your yeah. business and you learn about their business, it really does show.
You're absolutely right. New Appointments Group, her recruitment consultants, are really part of the Kent fabric. They've been around a long time. They're a very well respected firm. They are massive players in the Kent business market.
While we're on, can we send our best wishes to Janice Watton, who I'm sure we all know, because she's been feeling a bit poorly recently. And Janice, I know you're recovering at the moment at the Queen Elizabeth in Margate. So Janice, we wish you a speedy recovery and we miss you.
Yeah, that's the tall one. Janice, get well soon, and we look to see you back soon.
Sorry, Janice Noble now. Apologies, yes, Janice, you married recently.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Martin. Yeah. And we've also had a tweet from Fruitworks that said, "Thank you for shouting out for our event on Thursday to help businesses with personal branding and social media management. Fruitworks.co/create. There's nothing like plugging it, is it? Go for it. We're going to introduce a new feature to the show now. Which we've called The Counting House. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show again the lovely Jane Ollis, Managing Director of Rift Accounting. But first I'm going to get Jane to explain what The Counting House is all about, and then we're going to talk about today's episode after that, if that's okay. So, Jane, over to you. What's The Counting House all about? First of all, explain what a counting house is.
A counting house was actually first established as the place where money was counted.
Blimey.
And then moved on from that, from the place where accounts were compiled.
Right.
And if you go back to Tudor times, they'd actually have a special table laid with a green cloth on it, on which the clerk would come and enter figures into the ledger. So it has great historical context.
I also, I don't know if this is a myth or not, but I also heard a story once that said that quite often back in Elizabethan era, that they actually used a checkerboard to count money in the same way that you use an abacus, and that's where we get our current term exchequer.
Well, there we go. That's a fantastic fact. Thank you, Mr. Paul Andrews.
Brilliant. Cool. So the counting house is a place where money got counted, and then eventually it became a place of bookkeeping. What? What?
You guys should get a room.
Why? Just because I know stuff about accountants. So basically, what are we going to be covering in the counting house? What's the counting house going to be about each time that we're on?
Each time that we're on, the counting house will include interviews with great entrepreneurs. So people who count in business.
Because so not Martin, then.
No troublemakers. No
No riffraff and troublemakers. You don't want any of that. People like Jackie and Jay, but not Martin, right?
Because people run business, but are they entrepreneurs?
Right.
And the work that we've done at Rift Accounting in the last 15 months since we've been up and running has showed a lot of people start a business because they're great at what they do, they want to earn some money, they want to be their own boss. Only a few of them, I think, are what you would really call an entrepreneur. So this feature, every month on the Business Bunker, will be about exploring the stories of entrepreneurs. What are the magic ingredients that they have? Hmm. What can we learn from that? Because great entrepreneurs build great businesses.
I want to just inject something here, because it drove me nuts. And I fell for it. I fell for it big time last night. There was a post on Facebook last night, and it was from an American website. And it just said, entrepreneurs are just rich kids with nothing better to do. Okay? And when I first saw that, I just thought, it's clickbait, you know, I'm just not even... You wouldn't believe the amount of people underneath that post that were talking the most absolute dribble I've ever heard in my life. There's no better way of putting it. And I don't want to get political or anything, but there's some people in this country that just really don't know which end is up. And the most amazing nonsense was being spouted under there. So eventually I had to wade into that little argument, which I don't normally like to do, but I felt I had to. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you that because it's apposite to what you were saying, that sometimes... And somebody actually posted this, and it said, do you actually have a different definition of an entrepreneur to the rest of us, to the person that posted it? Which is very true, isn't it? We don't always work that out. I mean, I know someone very close to me, I'm not going any further than that, who's a very successful business lady, and she always objected to being called an entrepreneur. She is not an entrepreneur. She doesn't take risks. She isn't expanding her business into other areas. She does what she does, which is a professional service that she's an expert in. And therefore, she said, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I'm not a risk taker. I'm a business person.
I would agree with that.
Mm. Yeah.
Is that a label that business people aspire to, or is it a label we like to give people like Richard Branson in order that we can separate them and put them on a pedestal separate from everybody else? I don't know.
I think there is a big difference between the two, between an entrepreneur and someone who just wants to run a business. Mm. And there can be both, but there is a big difference. And I've been looking at what I think are five magic ingredients.
Okay,
I'm
looking forward to this, but just to carry on this theme, I don't think one's any better or different to the other, but there are definitely entrepreneurs and there are definitely business people. And someone like Branson is an entrepreneur. He'll start a business in any old field, you know, trains, planes, books, Coca-Cola, anything that looks interesting. Business people won't do that. They stick to what they know. They will innovate within their business. Well, quite rightly, you know, they may do something different. You know, if you specialise in bookkeeping, you may move it to the cloud or, you know, do some innovative things with it. But you stick within the parameters of the business that you're in. And I think that's the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. But, Jane, so five things that you want to tell us about that.
Five secrets I want to share.
But luckily no one's listening. So you can tell us and no one will ever know. We'll keep it a secret. Go for it.
Right. I think the first thing that defines an entrepreneur is their ability to look at themselves and their own areas of their lives where they're unhappy, they're worried, they're anxiety, they have anxiety about something. Because every great business starts from fixing someone else's problems. So being able to reflect on yourself and your own areas of unhappiness. So it could be, I love going to Starbucks in the morning. I love buying a coffee, and that's all great. But actually, I'm so frustrated because I have to stand in a queue. I've only got 2 minutes till my train goes. And actually, what I really would love is to be able to arrive here and my coffee's here. And now you can go to Starbucks. You're on the way. You can sit in your taxi or however you're getting to Starbucks. You can order it on your app, and your coffee's waiting for you when you arrive.
Right.
So entrepreneurs, think about all those areas of where you're feeling anxiety and pain.
Okay.
And they think about, oh, well, what if?
Mm.
What if? So for me, that ability to reflect on their own life and other people's sets them apart.
It's a really good point, that, isn't it?
Because it is, absolutely.
The most successful brands, whether it be Apple today or, you know, Unilever, whoever it was, whoever it will be, ultimately become successful by solving people's problems.
Absolutely, they do. But Jane, having identified it, I can see that quite clearly, that it is frustration that makes you an entrepreneur. It goes, why do you do that? Why do they do it like that? Why can't I do it something differently? Mm. And the difference is, I guess, that a lot of people can feel frustrated by something, and a few people will actually do something about it.
They can tap into that. And then what they're great at is generating ideas.
Mm.
What if? And in fact, the more audacious the idea that they come up with, the more likely the chance that business is to be an outrageous success if they can pull it off. So they're just really good then at thinking creatively and laterally about, oh, I wonder if we could do X, Y, and Z, and have that ability to think through different solutions to that person's problems.
I love disruptive businesses. I love disintermediation and all those things that you can do to disrupt something that works already, or maybe doesn't work already, if you see what I mean. And I think that is a great source of new ideas and new creativity and new businesses, especially now, where you can actually affect a business in a way that you couldn't do 50 years ago due to the onset of technology, which means that most of us can bat well above our weight now as opposed to how we used to be able to do it. Cool.
And true innovation is actually hard to come by in the marketplace. I was watching the TV the other night, and, you know, WeBuyAnyCar.com has been around for a while now.
Yeah.
But there's another entrant into that marketplace, and they don't say we buy any car. I think it's something like we quote any car.
Yeah.
You know, so they're a competitor that's clearly just trying to copy someone else's business model. And you think, well, look, you weren't the first guys. You know, you haven't actually brought anything new to the table.
Many years ago, when I had a proper job, before I worked for anyone else, I was working for Citibank, the American bank. And one of my last jobs at Citibank, so I was there a long time, was head of futurology, and I was looking at future systems and stuff like that. And we did quite a lot of research on new ideas. And quite often, though, the second player in the market jumping on the bandwagon actually succeeds better than the first player in the market. And we were having a conversation about exactly this earlier on about Friends Reunited. Friends Reunited were the world's first social media platform. Yeah, they were before Facebook, they were before Twitter, they were a British company. And yesterday they went bust and shut down. But they were first in the market, and they didn't develop it in the right way. Other social media platforms came along, and there were some others. I can't remember who it was. There was another one before Facebook, begins with an M, MySpace. MySpace came along, and a few others like that. So sometimes that the second tier onto the bandwagon actually succeed, which is why a lot of people do it. So they're not, we term that the bleeding edge. So basically, if you're first into a market, you can get yourself severely cut up, and then somebody else comes along and picks up the pieces.
Sure.
Jane, so what else are we looking at with entrepreneurs?
Well, once they've got their ideas honed down, they are then really good at pitching it. They are natural communicators, and that's not just because they've got the gift of the gab. It's because they are good at getting their facts together. They will pull a really compelling story together. So when they go out maybe pitching to investors or whoever it is, they're naturally contagious.
Mm.
They attract people, and I think that's really key. And not only do they attract people, they recognise that they can't do it all on themselves. And what you'll find with great entrepreneurs is they nearly have like a tribe around them.
Mm.
They bring people to the table who've got the skills that they need. So they're not generally sort of lone players. They're not sat on their own somewhere. They're natural collaborators. And they get this buy-in to their vision and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Branson is another classic example of that, isn't it? And he will quite openly tell you, I know nothing about aeroplanes or Coca-Cola or Coda, but, you know, it looked like a good business model and we could brand it Virgin, so I put a team on doing it, basically.
Right, yeah. I think the point is they understand their business and they understand that their business idea is based on genuine, real consumer insight in terms of, you know, what is the solution that we can offer, you know, that is innovative, that isn't necessarily out there currently.
Yeah.
So they're passionate about it because they've done that field work, if you like, in terms of understanding where the need is and therefore what the solution needs to look like. And, you know, how many networking events do you go to where somebody stands up to talk about their business?
Right.
And it's the flattest 60-second pitch you've ever heard in your life. And you think, well, you know, if you're not convinced, you certainly can't convince me.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, okay. So let's crack on with this.
Yeah, well, I've actually, you know, as we've talked, gone through four of my five.
Right.
And the final one is about resilience and being able to quickly move when you've got to adapt and change and just having that endless enthusiasm to carry on in spite of, no doubt, massive roadblocks. And I think that ability to always pick yourself up when things go wrong, because things always go wrong in business. Things always go wrong when you've got great ideas, even, you know, they're ultimately successful. You can guarantee in business is never a smooth ride.
Absolutely.
And entrepreneurs pick themselves up. Their business may fail, and unfortunately in the UK we have a culture where that's seen as really bad. In the US it's seen as part of the journey, the learning journey of great entrepreneurship. But that ability to just keep going and always moving forward, even if you're just crawling, it's always about that forward direction.
I don't know if you recall, most of you are too young, there was a chap called Tom Peters, and Tom was a senior consultant with McKinsey's. And Tom wrote the very first ever management book that went to number one on the bestseller list back in 1982. He wrote a book called In Search of Excellence, and it became a cult book in which he identified excellent businesses and excellent companies. And he became very big on the speaking circuit. And many years ago, I also worked on the speaking circuit, and I had the pleasure of speaking on the same platform as Tom. And he was talking to a room full of corporate executives, And somebody in the audience said something about failure, and he rounded on the audience en masse, and he went, if you haven't been fired or you haven't failed by the time you're 35, you just ain't trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. He said, push the envelope, get yourself fired. And of course there was laughter, and everybody nodded and all the rest of it. And of course everybody went back and went, no, I'm not doing that. But you're right. In the US especially, failure is a badge of honour. It means you've been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt and arrived out the other side. In the UK, we tend to frown on failure, and it becomes something of a stigma that we stick with. But failure is really important. Most of you know that I own loads of businesses, but I've had more businesses fail than I currently own. We just don't talk about them a lot. And that's the thing, really, is that you can't be right all the time. You just can't. You can't get it right. And there's all kinds of things. It's not necessarily your fault that something failed either. You know, it's just the timing was wrong, or the Absolutely. Circumstances were wrong, or you didn't have the resources to hand, or you got, you know, we were talking with Jay earlier, you didn't make the right decisions up front and get, you know, the right infrastructure in place, and, you know, you fell out with your partner or whatever. That can lead to failure.
Well, I think one of the most important things any aspiring entrepreneur can do is study failures, because if you can learn from them. In fact, Mr. Paul Andrews, I think we need a whole session looking at all of your business failures and why they failed.
We need a few sessions, to be honest.
Well, going back to what you said earlier, though, Paul, you know, that's why the second entrant into a marketplace is often commercially more successful, because what they've got is the business to go with the idea, not the idea with no business to back it up.
Yeah. So. And I can see where the gaps were and where you failed. No, absolutely.
But resilience, you know, really interesting point, because you know, it's a lonely business. Running a business, any kind of business, is actually a very lonely business.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you've got to be able to deal with that.
One other thing, I don't want to get political about this. I just want to make the statement about this. One of the things that is beginning to worry me, we are starting to develop in this country a kind of anti-business kind of approach to things. You see so many things in the media nowadays that kind of having a dig all the time based on a very limited set of knowledge. You know, it's easy to point at companies that don't pay their corporation tax. But the trouble is that the language that's used around that isn't identifying half a dozen businesses that that accounts for. There's 5.2 million businesses, you know, and 5.1 and 3 quarter million of them have no problem at all. But that's starting to grate on me a little bit, but that's something for another time. Coming back to Jane and this entrepreneurial stuff, I want to kind of turn that on its head a little bit, because Jane is Managing Director of Rift Accounting. You're an accounting company, yeah? It's a professional service, like the law. But one of the beauties of Rift is you're very new relative to all the other 100-year-old accounting firms. And you guys have come into this with a completely innovative way of doing things, have you not?
Yep. It's all about turning a whole proposition of accounting being something that's done at the year end to something that's completely proactive instead of reactive. Mm. And that just flipping that on its head changes the service that you offer.
Absolutely. And you guys are very innovative in what you do. It's all about building the relationship on an ongoing basis with your customers, as you said. And you're kind of making waves in the establishment of accounting and stuff like that for all kinds of good reasons. But again, it's entrepreneurial, isn't it, within what you're doing and trying to do.
I'm going to have a go at an analogy here.
Go for it.
Because a lot of people hate numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, numbers are, you know, their worst nightmare. Mm. Spreadsheets, numbers, P&L, balance sheet, whatever it might be. Give it all to the accountant. Mm. But actually, if you can flip that on that head, and the analogy I'll use is golf, because you had Neville on last week.
Yeah.
You had Shirley talking about, or was it the week before, talking about golf?
Yeah.
And it's the same with golf and putting. You know, putting is probably one of the most important skills that you need in the game of golf. Mm. And if you can actually turn that negative, because most people don't putt well.
Yeah.
But if you can turn that negative in a positive, you're going to be so much better at putting and playing golf generally. Mm. And I guess it's the same in business.
Well, one of the things that I've always said, once you've got your business up and running and you've got your articles of association and you've got your shareholders agreement and you've got your legal infrastructure in place, the next thing you need to do is to get your accounting in place. And again, it's another thing that people skimp on. Now, I'm here to tell you, I'm the worst person in the world at numbers. Yeah. I left school when I was 14. The last thing I did at school was a mock CSE exam in which I scored a massive 6%. Okay. I've no idea if that's good or not, because my maths is so bad, I just don't know. But I thought that made me in the top, like, 10%. Is that not how it works? Anyway, me and numbers don't get on, okay? But after a couple of years in business, I realised that there are some basic accounting things that, as a business person, you need to know. You need to be able to read a balance sheet. You need to know your P&L, and you need to know your outgoings, your costs, basically. And those things are the only crucial thing about a business. All the other stuff your accountants can do. They can do all the tax returns and the filings and put it here and you can't claim for that and all that kind of nonsense that you need somebody to sort out for you. But you must understand the basics of the numbers. Otherwise, you just can't run a successful business. I don't know what your feelings on that are, Jane.
I agree. At the end of the day, there's one successful number for me, and it's profit.
Yeah.
And from that, though, you need to see what leads you to that and what will help you on that journey.
Mm.
And if you're starting up a business, it's often when is you get your break-even point.
Yeah.
So when we have someone new comes to us with an idea, and they might already have set up their limited company, first thing I want to do, though, is road test their idea for them.
Mm.
And just do that sense check, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's a good idea. Have you been out there? Have you tested it? Have you got, you know, had it critically pulled apart by 50 of your best friends? Have you got really just checking it before and then turning that into some numbers that say, well, actually, well, how long is it going to take you before you break even? And then,
I actually like that. And there's some interesting stuff in there as well, because quite often people's research really just boils down to, well, I asked my mum and she liked it. And, you know, you go, yeah, well, she would, you know.
How many businesses out there can actually put their hand up and say, I've got a business plan, I've got a current business plan for my business? Mm. And I mean, I used to do a lot of work as a consultant for the Startup Loan Company, which is government money that they want to lend to new startup businesses. Yep. The only proviso was you need to have a business plan. And the business plan wasn't for our benefit to lend them money. The business plan was for the benefit of the business owner so that they knew what they were actually getting into and that they actually had a viable business on the back of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jane, 5 tips for entrepreneurs. Really brilliant. It's something that we're trying to encourage more and more, entrepreneurs to start businesses and get involved. It's a feature that we're going to regularly feature on the Business Bunker show, The Counting House, and we're going to talk about some other business-related and entrepreneur-related things over the coming weeks and months. For the moment, thank you for bringing us those 5 tips. Are you going to have a blog about that?
It's written and it's there and it's ready for you to post.
Fabulous. So we will put a blog up about that, and I guess it will be on the Rift site. It'll also be on the Business Bunker site. And just so that you know, but to make it easier, we've given Rift a page of their own, and we're going to put up all the stuff that we're going to hear from the Counting House on that page. We've also got some other stuff at the moment, which I put on there just so that there was something on the page, really. We've got a blog from the lovely Annette on starting a business, which is a really interesting blog. And I also put the stuff from Forging the Future, which was an event that Jane and I hosted back in last spring, which was interesting. And then there's a video from an event that Jane and I did called an Unconference, which we did in Canterbury, and the video is up on that page at the moment. But we'll add this blog to that page.
Thank you.
And then you can go into the Kent Business Radio website /Rift and find their page with all this kind of lovely stuff on it. And do go to the riftaccounting.co.uk website as well, because they've got tons and tons and tons of really good stuff in their blog pages, and they've got loads of free downloadable resources for people that are starting businesses about all the kind of things that you need and want and have to have when you start a business. Fabulous resources, all free to download, so do check that out. Jane, for the moment, thank you once again for joining us and starting a fascinating debate, which I'm afraid I kind of got too much into as well, in terms of telling you my thoughts and feelings on it, but it's something I'm passionate about, entrepreneurship. 5 tips for entrepreneurship. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Jane in the Counting House. Absolutely brilliant. Blimey, I don't know whether Twitter's caught up, come back or whatever, but I've just noticed there are 182 outstanding tweets. I don't think I'm going to get through all of those, but I am going to try a few of them, and I've still got quite a few emails to read. You've got some emails to read, I believe, Martin, and we've also got the FSB news to cover before the end of the show, so we will try and catch up with some of this stuff. I've had a tweet from Bedfont Scientific, and they say, VanillaWeb, please will you vote for Bedfont in the EBA Awards? There's a link in the tweet and in our bio. And it's a great show. Thank you, Paul. No, thank you. So the best way of doing this, I think, is to follow Bedfont on the Twitter. And their Twitter handle is Bedfont. That's BedFontLTD. Bedfont Limited. Bedfont LTD on the Twitter. Give them a follow. Give them a vote. I will retweet that tweet. So if you follow me or the Business Bunker, you will see that. And it has a link where you can vote for Bedfont in the EBA Awards. I believe, I might be wrong here, as far as I know, and if anybody else here knows different or can corroborate this, I believe Bedfont are a scientific manufacturing company based in Harwicham area, I think. But they're a long-established scientific manufacturer, as far as I know. So do give them a vote, please. I've also had an interesting tweet from a lady called Celia Glynn Williams. And she's from Canterbury City Council. And she says, Canterbury City Council are offering consultations on transport plans, budget and the corporate plan, and we're keen to hear the views. Oh, I've got some views on that, let me tell you. And she's given me a link to a website where you can input your input to Canterbury City Council's plans, and that is canterbury.gov.uk/your-council. Let me give you that again. That's canterbury.gov.uk/your-council. And you can go and participate in a discussion and a consultation about Canterbury City Council's transport budget and corporate plans. And they have got a lot of plans in the pipeline. There's a lot of things going on.
Big development going on at Thannington, is it?
Thannington Park has been approved, mm-hmm. which is a massive mixed development of housing and a business park and a new school and quite a few other things. There's a proposal to close half the car parks in the city centre, which is not a good idea. And they're trying to get away with that by building a multi-storey car park at the West Station, which is also not a good idea because the road won't take the traffic, but hey-ho. That's just my opinion. There's lots of other things happening in Canterbury, not least of which Fruitworks is expanding massively as well. So there's lots of things going on in Canterbury, and the good folks at Canterbury City Council have therefore put up some pages where you can consult on all of this.
They are good, though. They do get out and about. Chris West was at Jackie's networking meeting this morning. So, they're pretty proactive in the community.
Funnily enough, Chris co-hosted, along with Jane and I, the unconference we ran at Canterbury Cathedral Lodge back in November. And they were great supporters of that event as well, were they not, Canterbury City Council? And for those that don't know, Chris West is the Head of Economic Development and Business for CCC.
He was a pleasure to work with.
Absolutely.
And there may be plans afoot, Mr. Paul Andrews.
Oh, plans afoot. I like plans afoot.
Let's give him a plug while we're on, because he runs two fantastic services. One is Grow My Biz, and the other one is Start My Biz.
Absolutely, yeah.
So whether you're an established business looking to grow or you're a new business looking to start up, there's help available from Canterbury District Council.
Absolutely. We've also had a tweet from the lovely folks at Western Hanger Castle. And they say, could we have a shout-out, please, for Kent's finest wedding venue? Western Hanger Castle, just around the corner here from where we are in the studios, just off Junction 11 of the M20, behind the old Folkestone Racecourse, you will find the absolutely delightful Western Hanger Castle, where, funny, it's great how this show is produced, isn't it? Are you not impressed how this whole thing comes together in a planned thing? We were just talking about Forging the Future, which actually took place at Western Hanger Castle.
A beautiful venue and run by a lovely lady called Sarah Poole, who just is about delighting people and visitors and guests.
She's so passionate about her venue there for weddings and corporate events, and it is such a gorgeous place. It really is a fantastic place. She has probably the best opening gambit in a public speech I've ever heard. She said, I was made redundant from my job in a catering company, so I bought a castle. And what's not to like about that? Yeah. Fabulous. Right. I'll tell you what, Martin, can you read an email while I try and undig the rest of these 100?
Yes. Another event happening on Thursday, the Marlow Theatre, Canterbury. My good friend Brian from the Chamber of Commerce will be hosting a networking breakfast. I believe it starts at 8 o'clock, 8 till 9.30. So Canterbury, very hot to trot at the moment. And there is a Kent Invicta Chamber networking breakfast happening Thursday morning at the Marlow. Tomorrow evening, if you're in Tunbridge Wells, we've got at the Royal Wells Hotel after hours, networking again from the Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if there are people out there that aren't subscribed to the Chamber of Commerce emailing list, get yourselves on that, because there are weekly, almost daily updates in terms of the fantastic networking events that they put on that come through. So it's a great way of keeping yourself informed there.
Fabulous. I've just had an update tweet from the lovely folks at Bedfont Scientific. And they say, thank you, Paul. Yep, you are right. We manufacture medical devices and we are based in Harwicham and we are celebrating 40 years in business. So fantastic. Well done, guys. And thank you for updating us on that. I've had a tweet from Natalie Bonet, and I think this is based on Jane's entrepreneurial thing. And she was, and the fact that we were talking about accounting and numbers and all the rest of it. And Natalie said, I find that quite a lot of people haven't even worked out what their personal survival budget is, i.e. how much their day-to-day lives cost. And that's absolutely true, isn't it? It's absolutely true. What do you need to survive while you're starting a business? Mm-hmm. I quite often tell people this with Jobs in Kent, my primary business. It took 4 years to make our first sale, which was 25 quid. So basically, you have to have a plan. You know, for me, that was a part-time job that I had to do to, keep things going.
That's a really good point, Natalie. And going back to startup loans again, one of the financial templates in the startup loan business plan is the personal household survival budget. Mm. How much money do I need to draw out of my business every month in order to balance my books at home?
Okay.
Really good starting point.
I'm not really sure what she's going on about, but Jules has just surfaced. Yeah, she's surfaced and she's having a rant.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to read your rant and try and unpick what she's going on about.
Okay.
But she's ranting at Canterbury City Council. So I think it's in line with that.
Well, it's
not us. Yeah. She says, I can't believe that four grown men can't pick up a bit of cardboard and take it to the tip. So I think that's her take on where Canterbury City Council need to improve their services, I think.
When
that,
she
Jules.
Says a bit of cardboard, she actually had a new Mini for Christmas and it was delivered in a cardboard box, so that's what she means.
I'll tell you what more likely is probably 8 tons of cardboard from her Prosecco intake at Christmas is probably what it was.
Stolly bolly, darling, stolly bolly.
Mm, absolutely. We've had a tweet from Sugar and Yeast, someone called Simon, who's tweeted that they're listening in. Well, thank you for that, Simon. Thank you for joining us. Hazel Adley is listening in. I'm going to fly through some of these because there's hundreds of them and we've got loads of other things that we need to get through. I'll tell you what, I've done those. We'll come back to some of those in a minute because I've got some emails to read as well. Very quickly, the Kent Women in Business Awards nominations are now open for the fourth Kent Women in Business Awards, and there will be a black tie dinner to celebrate the winners on the 11th of March. So they're not doing it on your birthday, Martin?
No.
They're doing it just before.
Similarly, mm-hmm. Is it Kent Excellence in Business Awards,
Kiba.
As it used to be, Kiba,
yeah.
Is also happening, and the award ceremony for that will be on Thursday, 17th of March. So if you hadn't already entered, and I believe you enter through Kent Invicta Chamber's website, mm-hmm. you need to do so, and I believe the closing date for that is pretty imminent.
Right.
Beginning of February, something like that.
Yeah, it is,
so
yeah.
Have a look on the Kent Invicta Chamber website. Awards, great way of showcasing your business and actually getting the recognition that you deserve.
Absolutely. I'd just like to wish a huge congratulations from all of us here on the Business Bunker Show to our friend and big supporter, Chris Pollard, who has been appointed Managing Director of Eurasia, would you believe, for CKCGlobalMedia.com. So massive well done, Chris. Hope you enjoy your new role. I'm sure you will. And thank you for supporting us for all these years on the Business Bunker Show. We really do appreciate it. Do you know what we're going to do now? Maybe we're not. Why didn't that work?
Channel Radio News Update.
It's that part of the show now where we bring you news from the FSB. And we've got an event coming up, which is a business breakfast with your local MP. In this case, Kelly Tolhurst, who's the MP for Rochester. And Kelly will be meeting with business owners at the Innovation Centre, Maidstone Road, Chatham, on Friday the 12th of February between 8 and 9:30 a.m. So if you're a business owner in that constituency or in the general Medway area and you'd like to meet your MP and talk to her about your concerns, praise, or any issues that you want to talk to her about, come along to a breakfast meeting organised by the FSB Kent, and you can find out about it and book your tickets by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB Kent and Medway events. Do go into that, have a look. You can book your place there. It's free, but we need to know who's coming. And that's a meeting with Kelly Tolhurst. And there was one last week with Tom Tuggenhat in Tunbridge that was very well attended. So do come to that.
Mm-hmm.
Martin?
My local MP's all gone very quiet since Manston closed. I don't know quite what's going on there. But before the election, it was all we must keep the airport running. And now he seems to have disappeared off the radar. So
I like that. That's a pun. He's off the end of the runway and under the radar.
National Living Wage, 1st of April 2016. Prepare for the National Living Wage. Correct rate of pay, £7.20 per hour for staff aged 25 and over. Think about your own business. Which staff are eligible for the new rate? Update your company payroll in time. Communicate the changes to staff. Log on to livingwage.gov.uk for more information. National Living Wage, 1st of April. What a day to do it. Why does anybody do anything on the 1st of April?
Absolutely. I just need to interject in the FSB thing here, because Natalie has just told me off, and I've just caught up with a tweet. Of course, her business is KCA, not KBA, and that's what her new number plate says. Do forgive me. Right, EU trademark reforms have been finalised. Reforms to the EU trademark system have been approved by the European Parliament. The changes, which include a new trademark directive and amendments to the Community Trademark Regulation, will mainly reform governance issues. Under the reforms, national laws will be aligned with European legislation, proceedings will be modernised, and firms will benefit from increased legal certainty when applying for and enforcing an EU trademark. A consultation on how to implement the reforms in the UK is expected to be available in early 2016.
Can anybody remember Operation Stack?
Yep.
Right, what a nightmare that was last summer. So I believe that there is now a think tank.
Blimey.
Yes, local people, local businesses are being canvassed for their opinions with regard to Highways England's consultation that has now opened. The consultation closing date is imminent. It's the 25th of January this month. You can log on to, it's a bit of a long-winded one, but if you go on to gov.uk and look in their government consultations, there is something called the Management of Freight Vehicles Through Kent. Respond to this consultation. Please give your views, particularly small businesses that would have been affected by that chaos last summer.
Absolutely. There's also a new Better Business for All website. It's a major step for Kent regulators. Kent regulators have taken a major step forward in their Better Business for All initiative with the launch of their new website, which is www.bbfa.biz. The website is a portal for anyone running or starting up a business with useful information on how to comply with legislation and who to contact for advice. The Better Business for All partnership includes Kent Fire and Rescue Service, Kent Trading Standards, the Health and Safety Executive, the Food Safety and other local authority regulators. Working alongside the South East Local Enterprise Partnership, SHLEP, and Federation of Small Businesses, the Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce, and Produced in Kent. So do check that out. That's bbfa.biz, the new website for the regulatory environment in the county.
Apprenticeship 2020 Vision outlines the government's wish list and vision for apprenticeships, particularly amongst larger businesses moving forwards. So the government objective is to deliver 3 million new apprenticeships over the next 5 years in total. And I think there's all sorts of talk about a payroll levy for larger businesses to fund some of that investment. Again, you can log on to gov.uk, government publications, Apprenticeships in England, Vision for 2020, to find out more information about that. But there are also, clearly, you know, there's lots of apprenticeship training providers out there that can offer you advice on that as well.
Okay. There's new laws proposed to encourage cross-border online shopping. I'm going to have a little bit of a rant about this at the end. The European Commission has published draft legislation as part of its digital single market strategy. If implemented, the legislation would harmonise consumer law in relation to online shopping throughout the European Union, which the Commission hopes would result in more consumers purchasing goods online from traders in another member state. Although 50% of consumers in the EU shopped online in 2014, only 18% purchased goods from a retailer in another EU country, and just 12% of EU retailers sold goods online to consumers located in other member states. And the reason for that, EU, is because you made a complete and utter mess of digital MOS or VAT MOS. You really did make a complete and utter fiasco of that, and I guess they're now trying to put it right by introducing yet more legislation. But that's their own fault for messing about with things. Martin.
Got a brilliant initiative here from Age UK. Mm-hmm. It's Age UK and social media. And Jackie, this is one for you.
She's not that old, Martin. How dare you? How dare he say something like that, Jackie? I can only apologise for him.
Jackie, you can hit me later. At Age UK Ashford, we would like to introduce some classes to our current members and anyone else over the age of 50. That's not old anymore, is it? To help people make better and safer use of modern technology and communications. What they want, basically, Jackie, is for businesses and households to donate any spare PCs or tablets or any IT equipment, ultimately, to help teach people, because clearly they haven't got it themselves and they haven't got the budget to go out and buy new stuff. So any businesses that you go into, for example, that are getting rid of their old PCs or equipment, you know, keep it. And hand it over to Age UK.
You're welcome to give me all that information, and I will have a look at it.
Brilliant.
We do give old, very old equipment to Computers for Africa currently, because
right, okay.
they refurbish it all, and it's all under the WE directive.
Fantastic. Yeah, so absolutely. The contact is Mike Bishop, and I shall pass that on to you. Thank you, Jackie.
Absolutely. With Silver Surfers, those over 50, are the fastest growing users of technology and social media. So, absolutely. Fantastic. There's a two-year plan to increase the take-up of R&D tax relief. HM Revenue and Customs has announced a two-year plan to increase take-up of research and development R&D tax relief among small firms. Measures will focus primarily on increasing awareness and making it easier for firms to apply for this type of tax relief. For example, HMRC will publish improved guidance to help increase firms' understanding of the R&D tax relief and provide business certainty through the Advanced Assurance Scheme. Under the Advanced Assurance Scheme, which was launched in November 2015, HMRC will assure eligible firms that their first 3 years of R&D tax relief claims will be allowed without inquiry. Now, Rift Group specialise in R&D tax credits. I'm not going to put you on the spot with technical questions, Jane, but it is one of those areas, and quite clearly HMRC are trying to address this now with more awareness. It's a scheme that's been running for quite a long time now, and still so many businesses have either A, never heard of it, or even worse, B, have heard of it and think it doesn't apply to them. Does it not?
Absolutely. It's the government's single biggest innovation policy, and it's still the least well-known. And in your business, if you're doing anything that you think, I'm going to try this, I'm not sure if it's going to work or not, that's a good sign to me that's doing some R&D.
Yeah.
And if there's some spend there, you can claim a percentage of that back. Mm. HMRC simplifying guidelines. They'll try, but it is quite, you know, understanding exactly what you can claim for and how to construct a claim. Any questions, just come to riffresearch.com. Always talk to anybody just to, you know, help them on their way.
I am going to put Jane on the spot, because I know you have a very pragmatic approach to doing this on behalf of clients, because you don't ask for clients to write you a cheque in order to manage their application. But what you do is quite reasonably, you say, okay, from the total claim that you're applying for, we would propose to charge a commission rate or, you know, whatever, a fee of X percent. So just how does that work exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. No win, no fee basis. So there's no risk at all to you in your business if you think you've got a claim. And the benefit of using Rift is that we're going to try and maximise that claim for you, not in a way that's, you know, fraudulent at all, but just because we can really get into the nub of what you're doing and make sure that you get the benefit. Because the more innovation that you're doing in the business and the bigger refund you get, the more you can do next year.
Absolutely. And I can confirm that as a user of Rift and someone that has acquired R&D tax credits back. The process does require support from someone that knows what they're doing. You know, without being rude, there's a lot of accountants around that either go, no, you don't want to do that, because they think it's too complicated for them to do, or they think they know how to do it and they don't. So it is best to work with someone like Rift. There are other companies available, but locally with someone like Rift. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is they go, yeah, okay, it's no win, no fee, but I've got to stump up cash. And what do I get back from HMRC? Actually, you get cash. A lot of people assume that they just write it off your tax bill. They do not.
The term actually, tax credit is wrong, isn't it? I mean, it's cash.
It's cash. You cash actually back. Get a check.
R&D cash back.
For money. Yeah. You get money in your account. They don't knock it off your tax bill. Mm. So you'd be astounded by what's available to claim. As Jane just said, it's one of the most closely guarded secrets of this government's attempts to encourage business. It's ridiculous, really. Cool. Have you got any more FSB related?
I've got one more that, go for it, that is really relevant, again, because of what's just happened. Calls for help for smaller firms to access affordable flood insurance. Now, I'm not sure we've suffered quite as badly as parts of Northern England with this, but you know, clearly insuring your business against flooding is becoming quite topical at the moment. So there is a call, and ministers are being lobbied over plans to introduce cheaper insurance, basically, to help businesses insure against the risk of flooding, which I think is a very positive thing.
Fantastic. We're actually going to be hearing in a couple of weeks' time from lovely Julie from Cascade Insurance over there in Ashford, who have worked out some products for small businesses specifically for flood insurance, which is really good, and that's something we're looking forward to talking to them about. Thank you for that. That's the FSB update for this week. We're kind of at the end of the show now, so I just want to tell you about what's coming up later on today on Channel Radio. I'm assuming she might be coming over, but she has been tweeting all afternoon, so she may be doing the show remotely. But at 4 o'clock is the lovely Natalie Benaig with Kent Creative Live Show. That's a show that focuses on the arts and the creative environment in Kent and the southeast of England. And it's a very popular show, so do have a listen. That's on channelradio.co.uk at 4 o'clock, Natalie Benaig and the Kent Creative Art Show. That's followed at 5 o'clock by Craig Avery. We've got one out and one in. And what I mean by that is Craig's been in India for the last 3 weeks. He's back this week, and Jules is off to India. So Craig's back from India. Craig is the lady's favourite, with his stripy socks and his vest. Who's not to like that? And Craig does a 2-hour show starting at 5 o'clock. And then that is followed immediately by...
Welcome on to the New Potatoes Show.
Team tracks of unsigned new and up-and-coming music presented by Mr. Jamie Andrews, starting at 7 p.m. on the New Potato Show here on Channel Radio. That's 7 till 9. At 9 o'clock, we have our comedy 60s hour, I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet. Do tune into that. And then we round off the evening with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down!
Cool drum beat and a squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So do stay tuned for all of that on channelradio.co.uk later today. I had a tweet from George the other night, and he said, I've just been sent a spam message from some vegans. Is that ironic or what? Did you get it? Spam from a vegan. Oh, dear. That made me laugh anyway. Look, I want to say a huge, huge thank you to today's show guests, Mr. Jay Sahota of SNS Law.
Pleasure, thank you.
The lovely Jackie Offin of JJ Systems. The equally lovely Jane Ollis of Rift Accounting. A massive thank you for Martin White for standing in at the last minute of Supply My Business and doing a fabulous job as co-host in lieu of Jules opting to have a duvet day.
Cheers, Paul. Been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, all of you, for participating in the show. It's been absolutely fabulous. We will be back with you next week.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.